Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, April 13th, 2020. This is Section A. The front page headline reads, Oil Price War Ends with Historic OPEC Plus Deal, by Grant Smith, Javier Bloss, and Salma El-Wardani, from Bloomberg. The world's top oil producers pulled off an historic deal to cut global petroleum output by nearly a tenth, putting an end to the devastating price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. After a week-long marathon of bilateral calls and 4 days of video conferences with government ministers from around the world, including the OPEC Plus Alliance and the Group of 20 Nations, an agreement finally emerged to tackle the impact of the global pandemic on demand. The talks almost fell apart because of resistance from Mexico, but came back from the brink after a weekend of urgent diplomacy, including the personal intervention of President Donald Trump, who helped broker the solution. Unprecedented measures for unprecedented times, said Ed Morse, a veteran oil watcher who was head of commodities research at Citigroup. Unprecedented in historical discussions of production cuts, the U.S. played a critical role in brokering between Saudi Arabia and Russia for the new OPEC Plus Accord. OPEC Plus will cut 9.7 million barrels a day, just below the initial proposal of 10 million. The U.S., Brazil, and Canada will contribute another 3.7 million barrels on paper as their production declines. OPEC officials were still waiting to hear more from the Group of 20 members, though it's not clear if those numbers will represent real cuts or just production idled because of market forces. We have demonstrated that OPEC Plus is up and alive, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman told Bloomberg News in an interview minutes after the deal was done. I'm more than happy with the deal. The deal caps a tumultuous month when Brent crude, the global benchmark, plunged to its lowest in nearly two decades, falling toward $20 a barrel. Earlier this year, it traded above $70 a barrel. OPEC ministers had to race onto a video conference call on Sunday, less than 4 hours before the oil market reopened, to close the deal. With the virus paralyzing air and ground travel, demand for gasoline, jet fuel, and diesel is collapsing. That threatened the future of the U.S. shale industry, the stability of oil-dependent states, and squeezed the flow of petrodollars through an ailing global economy. Mexico won a diplomatic victory, as it will only cut 100,000 barrels, less than its prorated share, having blocked the deal since the plan was first revealed on Thursday. Now its future inside OPEC Plus is uncertain, as it is expected to decide over the next 2 months whether to leave the alliance, delegates said. The biggest winner appears to be Trump, who refused to actively cut American oil production and personally brokered the deal over phone calls with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and King Salman of Saudi Arabia. Perhaps what's most remarkable about Saudi Arabia and Russia delivering one of the largest oil supply cuts ever is that the person who brought them back together and pressured hardest to cut was historically OPEC's harshest critic, President Trump, said Jason Bordoff, a former White House official during the Obama administration and now at Columbia University. Trump became the first American president to push for higher oil prices in more than 30 years, reversing his personal opposition to the cartel. I hated OPEC. You want to know the truth? I hated it because it was a fix, Trump told reporters at the White House last week. But somewhere along the line, that broke down and went the opposite way. The production restraints are set to last for about 2 years, though not at the same level as the initial 2 months. Copying the model adopted by central banks to taper off their bond buying, OPEC will also reduce the size of the cuts over time. After June 10th, the 10 million barrel cut will be tapered to 7.6 million a day until the end of the year, and then to 5.6 million through 2021 until April 2022. The production deal doesn't take effect until May 1st, leaving OPEC plus countries, which have significantly increased production over the last month, able to continue flooding the market for nearly another 3 weeks. Under the deal, Saudi Arabia will cut its production just a fraction under 8.5 million barrels a day, its lowest level since 2011. The OPEC Plus deal measures the Saudi cut from a baseline of 11 million barrels a day, the same as Russia. But in reality, the kingdom's production will decline from a much higher level. In April, Saudi Arabia boosted output to a record 12.3 million barrels a day as part of its war with Russia for market share. "We want to regain the stability of the oil market," Prince Abdulaziz said. The question now for the oil market is whether the cuts will be enough to throw a floor under prices as demand for energy craters. After the outline of the deal was announced on Thursday, oil prices in New York fell more than 9% as traders thought the cuts weren't large enough. With countries around the world extending their lockdowns, the death toll mounting in New York, and an unemployment exploding in America, the oil market is now far more worried about consumption than supply. OPEC itself acknowledged the challenge, with its chief warning ministers demand fundamentals were horrifying. In an internal presentation seen by Bloomberg News, OPEC told ministers it expected global oil demand to plunge 20 million barrels a day in April. Demand is down by more than double the 9.7 million barrels a day cut agreed, said Amrita Sen, chief oil analyst at Consultant Energy Aspects Limited. And with the issue with Mexico taking so long to sort, the credibility of the group has taken a hit. This article is entitled, "Health Officials, Central Part of Permian Has 100 Cases," by Stuart Dureen. The number of confirmed cases in the central part of the Permian Basin hit 100 Sunday, according to reports from area health departments and the Texas Department of State Health Services. The Ector County Health Department reported another two cases were confirmed Saturday to put the region over the century mark. The 100 mark includes totals from 10 counties with confirmed cases, including Ector and Midland, which combined for 75 cases. Ector is leading in this part of the region with 43 cases. Generally speaking, more cases are found north of Midland-Odessa than any other direction. Department of State Health Services reported Sunday that there were 11 cases in Andrews, 6 in Dawson, and 2 in Martin. There also were two cases reported in Crane County, located south of Ector, which had the first confirmed case in the Permian. Other cases in this part of the Permian include one in each of the following counties: Gaines, Howard, Pecos, and Winkler. Hitting 100 in this part of the Permian should be taken in context. The 100 confirmed cases across 10 counties are still fewer than the totals from Lubbock County, 270, El Paso County, 269, and Potter and Randall counties, where Amarillo is, with a combined 134 cases. The Ector County Health Department reported 462 persons have been tested, with 317 negative cases and 117 pending lab results. Of the 43 confirmed cases, 15 have recovered and 2 died. Both of the cases from Saturday were female, one in her 30s and the other in her 20s. The last 5 confirmed cases, and 6 out of the last 7, in Ector County have been female, according to the health department. All totaled, 26 of the 43 cases have been female. The Midland Health Department reports a more level gender spread, with females accounting for 17 of 32 cases. Midland Memorial Hospital reports 771 total samples tested, with 622 negative results and 116 waiting for results. The number of tests reported do not include those tests taken at private physician offices. Of the 32 confirmed cases in Midland, 6 are reported to have completed isolation, and another 8 had recovered, according to the Midland Health Department website. A second person in Midland County has died because of complications from coronavirus. The person was a female in her 70s who was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The Midland County Health Department reported Saturday that she was the 32nd confirmed case in the county and died Sunday morning, according to the City of Midland, Midland County, and Midland Memorial Hospital. No other details will be released at the request of the patient's family. The first coronavirus-related death took place on March 24th, according to information from the city and Midland Memorial Hospital. That person was a male in his 60s. He was the first confirmed case in Midland County. This article is entitled, MISD Works on Grading Methodology to Determine Advancement, by Stuart Doreen. MISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said last week that the district is working through what will be the grading methodology for grade-to-grade advancement. Riddick said Thursday during a meeting of the Unified Command Team that MISD's teaching and learning staff has determined there are 4 6-week periods of data and information that have grades related to them. MISD was in the 5th-6th weeks period when coronavirus pandemic impacted education, forcing closed campuses and the school's academic enrichment plan, he said. Midland ISD started the Google Classroom academic phase last week. Efforts are still being made to make sure all students have access to hotspots, Wi-Fi, and other devices technology to allow for all 26,000 plus students to benefit from the new educational phase. Grading is still not taking place, Riddick said, because the digital divide is creating inequity around our entire system. We are providing a way to gain feedback and give feedback to students, Riddick said. Riddick said his academic leaders, as many as 154 around the district, have spent time in a virtual hangout to determine the path forward toward the end of the academic school year. At this point in time, are you on track to navigate to the next grade level or to graduate? Riddick said. That's the work that the team is embedded in right now. Our teachers will be getting that information here this week, and then we'll be rolling out. The superintendent said last week that family members have access to the information regarding a student's attendance and what his or her grades look like. Progress report notifications will be provided to families. It is important that families get logged in, Riddick said. You can do that via your smartphone, as well as any of the devices that we've used to push the classroom to you into the home, so that you can gain information to know what the progress and the status of your student is currently right now. Food technology and distribution. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said last week that the district will move into the last phase of food distribution on April 20th. He said there will be a 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. food delivery when those in need will get both meals at one time. Currently, food delivery takes place in the morning and around noon. He also said volunteers are delivering more meals through the district's Meals on Wheels program. Riddick also said the district has had more than 600 requests for hotspots. He said last week the team is formatting 1,000 hotspots that will provide students the ability to get online. Riddick also said the district has handed out more than 1,100 Chromebooks. The district has said those parents with a technological need should contact leadership at their student's respective campus. School leaders also plan to push Wi-Fi availability from certain campus locations, food delivery areas, and other places, including some city parks. Go to http://www.midlandisd.net/COVID-19 for more details.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 13th. One-stop shop. Clothing store adapts to pandemic. The story was written by Tony Venegas. It's not every day that you would pick up your groceries at a clothing store. That, however, is what Krista Escamilla is now providing at her store, Rig ID Workwear and Safety in Midland. A place that sells clothing and safety gear to those working out in the oil fields has turned into something close to a one-stop shop given the uncertain times of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as the sharp drop in the price of oil. Quote, "We saw a need for essential goods," Escamilla said. "When this happened, we wanted to keep our team members working and help our customers and their families." End quote. The ball got rolling on this new venture thanks in part to Escamilla's brother-in-law, who works for Sysco Foods. She says that the idea of selling water and snacks in the store had been floated around for a while. The store already had coffee available to the customers who walked in. Recent events accelerated the need to make that switch sooner rather than later. As a result, the shelves at Rig ID now include essential goods such as rice, beans, eggs, flour, water, and many other essential goods that have become hard to find items since schools, restaurants, and other non-essential businesses have closed. The items range from smaller quantities such as a 3-pound bag of rice and a 2-pound bag of flour to larger bulk items, including 50-pound bags of those items. You can pick up items directly from the store itself, located at 5701 Starboard Drive, but Escamilla is encouraging those to order online to make sure that they can supply what they need. Once the orders are placed, they're available to pick up within 24 to 48 hours. Quote, "We really focus on those hard-to-find items," Escamilla said. "We're not a full grocery store by any means, but we wanted to help with some of these items. Everything that we've been stocking has been selling. We're just trying to keep up with the needs of the customers." Escamilla added that the store is also providing deliveries for those elderly or homebound and not able to make it to the store. They have also donated masks and other safety materials to local hospitals and medical care providers in the area. She says it's her way to do her part to give back to others. Quote, "We've had a lot of different families reach out," she said. "We're just happy to be able to give back and provide for our healthcare workers. They are the true heroes with everything going on right now, so we're happy to help in that capacity as well." End quote. As for what happens after this is over, Escamilla added that this service could extend once things begin to return to normal. For now, she says that she just wants to continue what she can to help those in need for as long as she can. Quote, "I was really happy that it was something that people can utilize," she said. "I know how hard it is to find some of these items, but we want to try and make things easier for everyone. We're just happy that we're able to provide it." End quote. Other emergency conditions still exist. This was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. "As I am writing this article, we have had over 1.3 million cases of COVID-19 worldwide, with nearly 80,000 deaths. In Texas, we've had over 10,000 cases and nearly 200 deaths. Those numbers are terrifying. I am so proud of the efforts that so many people in this community and across Texas and the U.S. are doing with social distancing to flatten the curve so those numbers are minimized. As we are talking about the numbers of COVID-19 cases, however, one thing that I'm hearing more and more from colleagues is, where are all the other patients? We are noticing that we are not seeing other emergencies at the rates we were seeing them before the COVID-19 pandemic. As bad as the numbers are for COVID-19, the numbers for heart disease are far worse. According to the American Heart Association, 859,000 people died in the U.S. related to heart disease in 2017. That was more deaths from all forms of cancer and lower respiratory disease combined during the same time period. Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in the world. With those numbers, we still should be seeing heart attack and stroke patients in the hospital at the same rates as before, but across the world, numbers of people seeking care for those conditions are decreasing. The Journal for the Professional Society of Cardiologists in Spain published an article last week stating that emergency procedures for heart attacks decreased in that country by 40% with the onslaught of the COVID-19 pandemic. That doesn't mean that people aren't still having heart attacks and strokes. It just means they aren't seeking care. In Hong Kong, reports are surfacing that people are waiting to seek care for heart attacks and strokes until the point when treatments are much less likely to be life-saving. Healthcare professionals believe that people are not seeking care for one of two reasons: fear or benevolence. Some people fear seeking care for heart attack or stroke symptoms because they do not want to come to the hospital or ride in an ambulance because they fear exposure to the COVID-19 virus. Telemedicine doctors are reporting being told by patients that they would rather die of a heart attack at home than risk getting the virus. Others are not seeking care because of benevolence. They try to wait to seek care, thinking it will save a valuable hospital bed for someone who has the virus. I completely understand both of those concerns. COVID-19 is very real, and it has killed far too many people. It is normal to be scared, but someone who is having symptoms of a heart attack or stroke who does not seek care has a much higher chance of dying or being permanently disabled from those conditions than they have of being exposed to the COVID-19 virus in an ambulance or at the hospital. On the benevolent side, for both stroke and heart attacks, if they are treated early, when symptoms first appear, time in the hospital can be very short, sometimes just overnight. But when people wait until they are in trouble and have little choice but to seek treatment, those stays in the hospital can be considerably longer. The best thing you can do to help someone else if you are experiencing heart attack or stroke symptoms is not to delay care, but to seek care early. Not only will you spend less time in the hospital, but you are more likely to return to your normal life without complications, so it is less likely you will need to return to the hospital again in the future. Please call 911 and seek care if you are having signs and symptoms of a heart attack or stroke. Heart attack symptoms include pressure, tightness, pain, or a squeezing or aching sensation in your chest or arms that may spread to your neck, jaw, or back, nausea, indigestion, heartburn, or abdominal pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, fatigue, lightheadedness, or sudden dizziness. Stroke symptoms include sudden weakness of one side of the face, sudden weakness in the arms or legs, particularly on one side of the body, and sudden changes in speech or sight. Don't wait for COVID-19 to go away. Heart attacks and strokes are things that are much better treated early. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 43. Ector County negative, 317 out of 462 tested, with 113 pending. 2 deaths. Midland County, 31 confirmed out of 771 tested, 1 death. Texas, 13,484 confirmed, with 124,553 tested. Total Texas deaths, 271. U.S. cases, 550,016 total confirmed, and 21,912 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site. Medical Center Hospital has reported its first death related to complications for coronavirus. The person was a woman in her 30s who was treated at MCH and died Sunday, a news release from the hospital Sunday detailed. No other details were released about the patient. A release from MCH said that the president and CEO, Russell Tippin, will discuss more about the patient's death in the daily hospital press conference on Monday. Ector County had 41 confirmed cases of the virus as of Saturday. 5 positive patients are being treated at MCH, with 3 patients in critical condition. MCH reported its first 2 positive cases on the virus back on March 29th. A relief fund to assist Brewster County residents, including students at Selross State University, has recently been established through the efforts of Big Bend Citizens Alliance and an SRSU alumna. BBCA, a nonprofit organization with volunteers from Alpine, Terlingua, Lajitas, and Marathon, started the Big Bend COVID-19 Pandemic Relief Fund to help Brewster County residents recover from economic hardships of the coronavirus crisis. Anyone who lives in Brewster County and recently lost a job or income because of the pandemic, including Selross students, is eligible to apply for cash assistance from the relief fund. There is an online application at bigbendaid.org, and printed applications are available at West Tex Community Credit Union, Alpine Community Credit Union, the Marathon Post Office, and the Terlingua Crisis Center. Deadline for the first round of funding is April 15th. Donations are being accepted at the Relief Fund website, bigbendaid.org. Donations to Big Bend Citizens Alliance at West Texas National Bank branches are also accepted, and donations should specify for the Pandemic Relief Fund. Mail checks to the following address: BBCA, Post Office Box 202, Terlingua, Texas, 79852. Include Pandemic Relief Fund in the memo line. For more information, including applying for funding, visit bigbendaid.org. Keys to good mental health during COVID-19. This was written by Brian Wingfield, LMFT. In light of recent events, here are some suggestions for dealing with COVID-19 if you and your family are attempting to self-isolate. Isolating can cause loneliness and a sense of disconnection. This can lead to increased anxiety and depression. The key is being intentional about how you and your family are spending your time. Avoid watching too much news. While it is important to remain in the loop regarding the news and what is going on in the local area, news watching should be limited. Spending too much time getting inundated with breaking news about what is going on in different parts of the country and around the world will not make you feel any better. Do stay connected with family and friends through video chats. As human beings, we are meant to be social creatures. Under normal circumstances, the suggestion would be to limit using electronic devices and use more of your time in face-to-face conversations. Unfortunately, for people practicing social distancing, it is not currently possible or even wise to continue to have a lot of face-to-face conversations. This is where modern technology can be a benefit in helping you to maintain your social connections. Do create a schedule for you and your family. The entire world right now can seem like a very confusing place, and it is not just children who are feeling like everything is out of whack. Creating and sticking with the schedule can be one of the easiest ways to make life feel more normal. A new stay-at-home schedule can help normalize everything for the entire family. If you are working from home, be sure to factor in such things as breaks and when you are going to officially shut down for the day. Also, let the other family members know the expectations for how they should conduct themselves around your work schedule. The schedule should also include alone time for you and the other members of the household. Finally, do practice gratitude. It is important to stay grounded and positive by focusing on what there is to be thankful for. Samaritan is offering telehealth counseling. Call 432-563-4144 if we can be of assistance.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, April 12th, 2020. Easter Sunday. Easter offers mankind the gift of hope. A commentary by Bishop Michael J. Siss, Diocese of San Angelo. This is an Easter unlike any we have ever seen. In the midst of a worldwide pandemic and an alarming plunge in the oil market, our lifestyle and our economy have been turned upside down within a matter of weeks. Despite how much we wish it would just go away, this crisis is far from over. How wonderful it would be if we could just wake up on Easter morning and with everything magically back to normal, like a special gift from the Easter Bunny. But our recovery is going to take some time. It will take patience, hard work, and hope. Easter is a Christian holiday. After Jesus Christ had been tortured and killed on a cross, wrapped in a burial shroud, placed in a tomb, and the stone rolled in place, it seemed that all was lost for the early Christian community. Jesus was dead. At that point, people thought the Christian story was over, but the miraculous events of Easter Sunday transformed everything. Because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, we Christians are a people of hope. The sad reality of death is transformed. Death is no longer a bottomless pit that swallows everything. Instead, for us, death is a bridge to eternity. Not only death, but any situation in life takes on new meaning in the light of the resurrection. Christians seek to live in the new life of the risen Christ, allowing God's grace to transform our real human experiences into something more beautiful. Being a Christian is not just a matter of enduring the pain of this life until it is over. It is not a matter of simply outlasting our current hardships until they pass. Being a Christian is about letting God transform our experiences into occasions of His glory. God can take any situation and find a way to use it to His glory and to our salvation. For example, in marriage and family life, God's grace enables us to work through our misunderstandings and forgive mistakes so that we can find a new level of joy together. When we lose a job, God's grace empowers us to regroup, retool, network, and start over with something new. When we have sinned, God's grace moves us to repent and receive healing mercy. When we face our weakness and vulnerability, feeling like we can't go on, God's grace gives us the strength to persevere. On this Easter of 2020, many of us have fears and anxieties associated with the outbreak of COVID-19 and the downturn of our local economy. God's grace can transform that fear into a deeper trust in Him. In the midst of this coronavirus crisis, God turns self-pity to gratitude, selfishness to generosity, and despair to hope. Right before our eyes, regular human beings with all their imperfections and foibles are becoming hometown heroes through the invisible power of God's grace. Just open your eyes and notice them in hospitals, at grocery stores, and in your own family. Living as people of hope is not the same thing as looking at life through rose-colored glasses. It is not naive. Hope is realistic, and part of reality is the fact that there is more to the situation than meets the eye. God is at work now, just as He was on that first Easter morning. Because we are a people of hope, even in a situation where things have fallen apart and all seems lost, we can get up, put one foot in front of the other, and let God make something beautiful out of it. In my faith tradition, we believe that hope does not come to us naturally. Hope is a theological virtue which is infused into the human heart by God's action. We cannot acquire hope by our own human effort. We receive it as a gift bestowed by God. Therefore, when we find ourselves low on hope, we pray to God for more of it. He is always ready to give us a new dose of hope. Unlike the limited supply of coronavirus test kits, God's supply of hope is infinite. The coronavirus is highly contagious, but hope is contagious as well. When we are around a person of hope, God inspires us to become more hopeful. Likewise, when we live out the virtue of hope, God uses us as His humble instruments to instill the gift of hope in our neighbors. For Christians, the message of Easter is not just about the historical fact that Jesus Christ rose from the dead nearly 2,000 years ago. It is also about the fact that God brings new life to us today, even when there seems to be only hopelessness, fear, and despair. For us, the true meaning of Easter is about opening up to ourselves, to the transformation, to God's new life, every single day. God has not abandoned the human race. The same divine power that gloriously resurrected the body of Jesus on Easter morning is still operative in our world in 2020. God will transform us in this historic moment if we will place our fears in His hands, trust in His grace, and ask for His gift of hope. Into the darkness comes the light of Easter. A commentary by Darren Wood, Senior Pastor, First Baptist Church. It's been a difficult few weeks. To say the least, it's been a difficult few weeks. The challenges each of us has faced, the fears confronting us daily, our concerns about the future, and most certainly the future of our children, cause our knees to weaken and our shoulders to sag. To compound the problem, this unseen enemy we currently face is paralleled with the crush of our economic realities crashing down around us. Into this moment, what shall we do? Our fears compel us to retreat even further, even beyond our quarantine and into the depths of our souls. Our fears whisper to us, this is for our preservation, to protect ourselves from even further damage. What lies out there that might seek to do us even further harm? The darkness feels heavy and anxiety hangs on us like a poorly fitted jacket. From a historical perspective, I found another Easter that didn't quite feel right. Go with me back to 1865. On Good Friday, April 14, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. They called it Black Easter. The sense of gloom, sadness, and foreboding that hang in the air was almost overwhelming. If we might borrow from them, how did they find their way through the darkness? The president's pastor took a passage and let it be the guiding light, a light in which perhaps we too can find solace. Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. We would do well to stop and consider this wisdom in our upside-down days. Our normal activities have ground to a screeching halt. For how long? It's anybody's guess. The uncertainty about what our new normal will look like is just as far out of sight. But we can know this. Our God rejoices in our stillness. It's in that moment of quietude that we can finally hear from Him, when we surrender the notion that noise and activity are inexorably connected to productivity. If we're still, the presumption is we're not productive. That's not necessarily true. Instead, used well, our stillness can lead to a productivity we might never have found in our busyness. Our stillness can mean great growth if we allow it. While there's much we cannot choose, there are still things we can choose. Here's a few questions to ask in your stillness. Who will I trust to meet my needs? Before this crisis arrived, most of us could trust in ourselves to meet our needs. Most of us had enough money to meet our physical needs and enough relational connections to meet most of our relational needs. We thought we had little to no need for God. But the fact is, we all have spiritual needs. We are wired as spiritual beings. Blaise Pascal, the noted French mathematician from the 17th century and author of Pascal's Wager, this theory stated each person wagers his or her life on whether God exists. In summation, he said it best, there's a God-shaped void in each of our lives. You can put other things there, they just won't fill the void. Who will you trust to meet your needs? Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. John 8:12. Do you need some light in this darkness? Make sure you're trusting the right person. Whom will I serve? If I am to either find or bring light to a dark place like Christ did, I must choose to serve as He did. Service means humility. Humility demands I put others ahead of my own needs. I shouldn't be my first priority. It means I get to embrace a servant's tools, just like Jesus did. That's not easy right now, but it still can be done. Here's how. Look for how I can serve those around me in my own home. What need they What need do they have that my skills can meet for those in my family? Let someone choose a daily game to play or their special movie to watch. Yes, even that is serving someone. Designate a day as someone's special day. There's no need to wait for an anniversary or a birthday. Every day is special. Celebrate it by serving the people in your home. As for people who aren't in your home, sit down and write someone a letter with pen and ink and everything. It's amazing what a piece of real mail does for someone. Do a drive-by. Honk and wave as you go by. Use your phone to call your neighbors, even if they're not in the house next door, to check on their well-being. Personal contact is highly underrated normally, but not now. When and where you're able, give of your treasure. The church I'm privileged to pastor, First Baptist Church, recently had an opportunity to do something really cool. RIP, Medical Debt, is a national service that locates people who have outstanding medical bills. In cooperation with local entities, RIP Medical Debt and our church were able to locate nearly 3,000 Permian Basin families who had outstanding medical debt hanging over their heads. Though we as a church have no idea who these people are, we knew it was the right time and the right opportunity. I'm delighted we had the chance to help. Here's the funny part. When we started this process, it was December. No one had even heard of the coronavirus, and oil was $50 a barrel. But God knew that those families would need a light in their darkness, and we were able to give just a little to make that happen. In essence, serve as you would want to be served. Give as you want to receive. One of the challenges we face with this moment in time is the drive toward self-protection and shrinking back in fear. Fear can lead to bitterness, anger, and ultimately even greater isolation. True, self-protection is a healthy and powerful force and reflects good sense. But if you never give and only receive, you become akin to the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea becomes so because it only has inlets. It does not have an outlet. What story will I tell those who come behind me about this dark time? Start at what story you want to tell and then draw a line back to where you are. How do I want this time to be written about in my family history? As a dark time of anger, frustration, bitterness, and harsh words? Or a time when we overcame the darkness with the light of hope? Recently, a friend gave me the chance to try out a genealogical website. I didn't think much about it until I sat down and started looking. Before I knew it, I had spent 3 to 4 hours piling through census records, birth and death certificates, marriage licenses, and voting records. What I found amazed me. It wasn't that I'm related to anyone famous or noteworthy, but that they lived their ordinary lives on purpose. They were farmers, pastors, teachers, ranchers, railroad engineers, soldiers. They left their tracks in the sands of time for me to follow. Their call to me in this dark time is simple. This too shall pass. Keep walking in the light God gives and push the darkness back. So now we return to Easter. The first Easter wasn't remarkably different from this one. People's expectations had been crushed. They were devastated at what they had lost, and the future was unclear at best. Their hope in Jesus had been dealt a devastating blow when he was crucified. But it's no accident John 20 begins at sunrise. Out of the depth of the darkest night they'd ever known came a hope they never expected. God has a way of doing that. Bringing light to dark places is His specialty. If you're in a dark place today, call out to the God who brings light into the darkness. He does His best work on Easter. Take comfort in the promise of Easter. A commentary by the Reverend Mike Hunter, First Christian Church. I told our church family last week that this may be the hardest thing I've ever had to write during my ministry. Never would I have imagined that I would have to tell folks that Easter is canceled. The preacher in me knows Easter isn't canceled. It never will be. The date we celebrate each year isn't a fixed date on calendars, much less a numeric certainty. But you know what I mean. On campuses across our community, state, nation, and globe, all types of worship where folks gather in close proximity have been suspended. Easter is one of those assurance moments. Even the most irregular of Christian worship attenders is well familiar with Easter's triumph over all dark things, most especially death. And death is what we are dealing with in this virus. It has multiple names, is not kind to the most vulnerable, and moves swiftly to finality in far too many cases. Simultaneously, other death pall has descended, perhaps the most busted of oil busts, or at least it feels that way with all the other events. We are like a prize fighter struggling to stay on our feet, having absorbed not one but two knockout blows. This is crippling and feels worse, and we do ourselves a disservice to minimize the impact. Many of our assurances have been taken away. We've held our breath when we've learned of folks becoming ill. We held close those whose jobs have been affected. We all have emotional motion sickness from the awkward suspension hovering over our teachers, our students. This is a historic, divining moment for literally the world. And yet, I am seeing so many signs of resilience in you. People are more sensitive. Compassion is creeping ever forward. We are checking on one another, sitting in our front yards and visiting from a safe distance, putting stuffed animals in windows and chalk painting words of encouragement on our driveways. None of these are heroic, because none of us possess the formula for vaccine or economic recovery. But we as individuals and as people are already on the road to recovery. We are resilient. Multiple times daily, we read of another great idea to make things better. On every essential drive to get groceries, we see something compassionate take place. When we drill down past the sensationalized headlines, we read the fine print that mortality rates are improving and that recovery ratios are still very high. Staying distant is bringing us together. That's the very essence of this rugged country. Our ancestors could speak of dust bowls and polio and World War II. Some of us remember Jessica and the well, and multiple oil economy collapses. This is ours. Not all the chapters are written yet, but many of us will still be here to help write them all the way to a new conclusion. Which brings me back to the Easter story. They walked to the tomb that day, expecting the worst. Even the gospel stories don't agree on the exact details, who was there, who wasn't, who spoke and who didn't. For the record, the women preached the first sermon of Easter, and initially The men weren't sure they could believe the speakers or the story. When bad news turns to good, the heart wants to protect itself from worse. But Easter also tells us a day is coming. Midland friends, a day is coming. There will be a day when the all clear is given to resume worship and all the other holy and important parts of our lives. Easter will come. Nothing can stop that. I just don't yet know the date. Take comfort that the promise of Easter has you, even now. I have no idea when the rest will turn for better or perhaps take us in a new direction, but that time will come and we will be able to tell stories of brave men and women, educators and community leaders. We will be able to tell those who follow us what still grieves us and what lessons we learned. And most importantly, we will be able to have a new appreciation of many things, including Easter and how death leads to resurrection.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.